really remarkable. She had to fall and broke her leg.
Yes.
And was in hospital for a long time. Then she got better and got about again.
Did she really?
And she'd gone to a meeting. And she was coming out and looking for a taxi. And she stepped into the road and the car, between two cars parked, and the car behind moved backwards suddenly and knocked her over. And she never really got over that.
I see.
I saw her afterwards and she was up.
Yes.
But obviously she got worse again.
Yes.
And I was just going up to London again. I was just going to write to her and say, saying, could I come and see her? And I heard she had died.
How did you actually get to know the family, Miss Mallory?
Well, the first time I met them was in Normandy. We were staying at the hotel. I was about 17 or 18, I suppose. And we were staying at a little hotel. We were going round Normandy on those little trains.
Oh, yes, yes.
That you used to before cars happened. And they had a car. They had one of the very early cars, I think. And this must have been about 1912. And they arrived. And my father, of course, knew them. I didn't know them at all. I hardly knew them. They existed. I'd heard of them. And the two elder ones, not Kathleen, but Sydney and Linda, the two elder ones, and Harry, their brother, suddenly arrived. So naturally we talked and so on. And then they said, you must come and see us. The real reason, I think, why we didn't know more of them, well, of course, they were abroad while their father was alive, to some extent, and they lived in London afterwards. My own impression is, but this is not for publication, that my grandmother was not very fond of her sister-in-law, nor was her sister-in-law of hers, one can see from some of the letters. Her sister-in-law had a large family, but my grandmother's only son was cleverer than they were.
I see.
And there's an amusing letter when, actually, he was brought up in America till the age of 9. And he was his mother's. His mother was a widow, and she was his darling son. And she thought that he was an angel. And there's a letter from Margaret Mann, her sister-in-law, saying, Jimmy is a nice little boy, but he's not quite the angel. His mother thinks he is. And I think there was a certain amount of, well, not exactly dislike, but they didn't get on very well, and therefore...
You are actually related, then?
She's my cousin.
I see. So anyway, you...
She and my father were first cousins. Her mother and my father were first cousins.
Yes,
we were second cousins.
I see.
But after that, we occasionally went to stay with them, and I got to know them quite well, because one of the sisters had an operation in the Wingfield on her foot. And her sister came and stayed with me. It was in the vacation, and went up to see her and so on. I got to know them quite well then, and I used to go and stay with them. They lived at Newbury. But Kathleen was never at home, you see. Kathleen lived with a great friend of hers, Edith Eckhart, I think her name was. And they had a flat in Hampstead, which was bombed in the last war. And then they were given another flat where you met her. And the friend died some years ago. 15 years ago, I should think.
She was living with there was a housekeeper there when I was
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But what was the family, where did it get its money from, sort of thing?
I think from Colonel Courtney.
Yes.
Certainly the man's never had much. And Colonel Courtney had, they had Irish connections.
That's Kathleen's father, you're talking about. Colonel Courtney. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And they had Irish estates, too.
I see.
Kathleen's second name was... I forget everything. It doesn't matter.
Anyway, it's an army family with landed property.
Yes.
And what sort of family was it? Well, it was presumably a fairly conservative family, was it then?
Well, I don't know. Certainly, Cousin Alice, I should think. Cousin Alice was a matriarch. She was her mother's eldest daughter, and she married Colonel Courtney, or if it wasn't Colonel then, in Malta, I think. Mm. And I should say she was very conservative. The whole family was after all. Well, I don't know. Harry, I think, was fairly conservative. But I don't think the sisters were. Certainly Sydney wasn't. I don't mean to say she would have been Labour. She wasn't of those dyed-in-the-wool conservatives that you often find in the army.
I
think her father must have had a certain amount of liberalism in him. I'm sure Sydney would have loved to go to college. She was the eldest, and of course, women's colleges had hardly started in her time.
I
don't know how Kathleen got there.
Yes.
But she evidently prevailed on her family to go to LMH.
Yes. Was it a sort of enlightened family? I mean, was there a lot of argument and discussion?
I shouldn't have thought so. Sydney was very much interested in public affairs. Linda, not so much so. Linda was more gentle and quiet.
I'm just trying to see where Kathleen comes from.
Well, I've always been puzzled about that.
Yes.
Because the family certainly wouldn't suggest her.
I
don't know, but I think her cousin may know.
Yes. Miss Furlong.
More about her early life. I don't.
Is it Furlonger, is it?
Furlonger.
Yes. I think perhaps I ought to write to her and ask.
Well, I think if you... she knows them, of course, much better.
Does she?
And I have met her once when I was visiting Sydney in London.
Yes.
They came in, she and a friend.
What relationship is she to...
She's a second cousin, I should think, like me.
I see.
I met her father and mother. They lived in Newbury for a long time, and the Courtney's lived there too. But
I really wondered why she should be Kathleen's executor, you see.
I think she was. She is a cousin.
Yes.
And obviously knew her well, much better than I did.
Yes. Well, I shall have to write.
I really only got to know her after her sister died.
Yes.
Just occasionally, if I stayed for the weekend, she was there, but
yes.
Generally very fleeting visits.
So if you were writing about Kathleen's family background, so to speak, where she started off from, I mean, is there very much to say except that it was an army family, quite well off?
I think her mother, Miss Coates, who catalogued these letters, and I've read the catalogue but I haven't read the letters, said to me she was very interested in Kathleen's grandmother, who was also of an army family which had settled in Guernsey after retirement. And had Guernsey connections.
That's her maternal
grandma. The Baines family.
Yes, I see. Mm.
And she used to enter into long theological arguments. I don't know about arguments, but statements and questions when she wrote to her husband, which interested Miss Coates very much, because, as she said, she'd come to the conclusion that Margaret was very bored. And, of course, in Guernsey society, if you were tall intellectual, you could be very bored. Lille Cherie did not generally produce intellectual people. But I think there was that strain in it. And
there's a strain of intelligence.
Yes.
Yes. What about religion? Is it Anglican, really?
About what?
Is it Anglican, Church of England religion?
Oh, Anglican, yes. Oh, yes. Church of England, certainly never anything else, but Evangelical Church of England, very evangelical. Margaret Baines' sister married a clergyman in Guernsey and produced a series of books which I was brought up on one or two of them, illustrating the various parts of the prayer book. You've got the collects, for instance, and the commandments and other parts too. And my father said he always related this was horror, and I wasn't allowed to have the book. He was said to figure as a little boy of a widowed mother who was angelically good.
So
I was never allowed to see that book.
So how did this family react to Kathleen's political and international...
Well, when I knew, you see, Aunt Alice and Cousin Alice, I don't know, because I don't think she ever mentioned Kathleen. But her sisters were very much interested, interested in what she was doing. And Sydney was a great upholder of the League of Nations and League of Nations Union and so on. And
so she's not a rebel or anything like that?
Well, not with her sisters, certainly.
No.
And Harry was a pleasant man, never married. He was an architect, but I don't think he ever practiced either. Not that I know of. But he did a fair amount of, sort of semi-charitable work. He visited the hospital and the prison and things like that in Winchester.
Yes, I see. So, really, Kathleen breaks away, I suppose, from the family.
I think you could say she broke away, but how much animosity there was about I don't know. Well, but she certainly never lived with the family.
LMH would anyway take you away, wouldn't it, I suppose. Anyway, you met her again, then you sort of become together again at the end of her life, the last 10
just
years.
Just at the end of her life. It's only since the last 10 years, since Sydney died, that I have got really to know her at all. And then we mainly talked about the family, because I knew much more about the family than she did.
Yes.
And I knew about all the Guernsey connections and so
on. She was interested in her family.
She was very interested at the end of her life, yes. Mm.
But I didn't really get to know her as a person. We only talked really rather at the general level. I mean, she was a very intelligent woman.
Obviously, very intelligent.
What other main things struck you about her, apart from her intelligence? And was she an easy person to talk to and have good relations with? I suppose it would be easier if you were related to her.
Yes, I think so, because we had interests in common.
Yes.
She was a very easy person to talk to, and always interested in public affairs and what was happening. You could talk to her about, especially about League of Nations questions and so on.
Yes.
I don't think I was as strongly pro as she was, but we didn't differ at all.
No. And she was presumably quite a she was quite an austere person in the sense that she dedicated herself to causes rather than
well, yes, I think so. Mm. I think so. She did certainly give herself to causes. Have you got Noel Baker's address at her?
No.
I've got that. I have got this. Furlong had sent me that.
Oh, did she? I would be very interested to see that, if you could possibly
I'll
lend it to me,
that.
Or have a look at it.
That's true.
Yes. But she, in later life, she simply based herself on Hampstead, in this flat, did she? And
yes, but she used to go and speak for the League of Nations Union, or United Nations Union, I suppose it is now, a great deal, and she went to America when she was, in the 80s, I think.
Did she really? And did she retain the evangelical Anglicanism of the family, do you think, or had she...
Well, I should say it was much modified. She told me some very amusing stories about Miss Wordsworth. Miss Wordsworth, she met. Of course, stories abound about Miss Wordsworth, but she met Miss Wordsworth once in the corridor, and Miss Wordsworth threw her arms round her and said, "Oh, my dear, you will come to chapel more often, won't you?" Kathleen said, "Yes, Miss Wordsworth." "But I didn't," she said, talking to me.
She was very impressed with Maude Royden, I remember.
Maude Royden
was one of her contemporaries, I think, at LMH.
More or less her contemporary, I should think.
By her. Maude Royden's a person, actually, I don't know whether you felt this, a person who obviously had tremendous influence during her lifetime, but who's almost completely forgotten now.
She is, yes, but she had an immense influence, I should say.
She did.
On people of my generation, more or less. Yes.
I suppose because she's such a moving speaker, partly, isn't it? She's got a very good voice, hasn't she?
Yes, she was a very good speaker. I have heard her.
Yes.
Yes.
Anyway, I wondered whether really Kathleen Courtney fits into a sort of rather crude pattern, perhaps. I'll switch off.
As far as I'm concerned, extremely little.
Yes.
As far as I know, most of my friends believed in women's suffrage, but they certainly didn't believe in suffragettes. I only remember one person expressing sympathy, and possibly she might have joined them, and she was a person who was very much on her own. She was a rather curious person who was rather looked down upon by other people. And it may have been a little bit of a revolt from that. Mm. But most of us, I've got a friend here who was up with me, but she's very blind and deaf, and I said to her, "What do you think there was any interest?" And she said, "Not in the least. I was much too concerned with getting on with my work."
Yes, that's interesting.
Yes.
But that's not to say you weren't in favour of woman's suffrage.
Oh, no. And Somerville, of course, had a parliament which had all the... acted exactly as in Parliament. You called each other the honourable member and so on, and we had a speaker. And it used to meet once a week in my first year. After that, it rather died. It rather depended how many people you had in college who were interested in politics. But all the first years were supposed to go and speak. They were more or less rounded up. And I think I spoke once, but not again.
So it was a sort of women's equivalent of the union, in a way, was it?
Well, no, it wasn't. It was purely in college.
Yes.
But there was a women's union to the extent of a debating society that met once a month. And people used to go...
A sort of intercollegiate women's thing.
Intercollegiate, yes. Mm. People used to go to that, and I have been. Mm. But on the whole, there was interest in politics, quite a lot of interest in politics, but not... in, at any rate, protesting women's suffrage. There wasn't, as far as I remember, any sympathy with the suffragettes.
Yes.
I think there'd been earlier much more sympathy. I just happened to come up at a time when possibly feelings were different.
Well, when Mrs.
You know how years differ and what they're interested in, and they influence each other.
Well, yes, of course.
Nobody who was in my year, I can remember, was very much interested.
Mm. And of course, Mrs. Pankhurst was going off the rails by the time you went.
She was, very much so. Yes.
Was that generally thought, actually, in the college, do you think? I mean, do you remember her actions? For instance,
Well, I think that's Mrs. Pankhurst.
Yes.
But there was no feeling of outrage at forcible feeding or anything like that I can remember.
Wasn't there really? You just felt that if you behaved like this, she behaved like that.
People didn't behave like that. It was silly. It wouldn't advance the cause.
Hmm.
I do remember a performance of a play. This was not in college, but by some people I know. Did you ever hear of Frank Brabant, who was a fellow of Wadham?
I've heard of
him. Was an undergraduate, and his father was a coach who lived in Museum Road, and I don't know who told me about them, but somebody did, and they used to invite me out. And I remember a play being performed there, probably quite forgotten now, where a man is violently anti-suffrage, and all his female relations arrive and say they've lost their jobs and he'll have to keep them. And they were very, very pro-suffrage, but not, of course, pro-suffragette.
No, that distinction is often forgotten, isn't it, nowadays? But what about Mrs. Fawcett's organisation then?
Oh, yes, Mrs. Fawcett was much approved of.
Was she?
Oh, yes. I should say so.
Mm. And did you actually have a branch of the...
No, we didn't have any branch. And indeed, Mrs. Fawcett, I think... My impressions about Mrs. Fawcett come more from my mother than from what I heard at college. My mother was very... admired Mrs. Fawcett very much, and was very suffragist.
Yes.
So was my father for that.
Yes. I really wonder, you see, there were quite a lot of demonstrations in Oxford about woman suffrage. There was one which led to a lot of riots and things. I wonder whether you remember any of those.
No, I don't. I don't.
Yes.
And as far as I know, they didn't touch the colleges. That's what's so odd.
Yes. I wonder whether... really the women's colleges felt rather vulnerable at that time, in the sense that they're surely fighting, aren't they, for position in Oxford?
Well, yes, I think they did feel vulnerable, and Miss Penrose certainly would not have approved if anybody had joined a demonstration, but she never said so.
Mm.
Well, she had any reason to say so. I don't think any of
none of you joined anyway.
No, and I can never remember any of the Dons talking about it.
Can't you really?
No.
That's very interesting. Because, you see, I would have thought that Mrs. Pankhurst's activities might be held to have discredited the women in Oxford and would have made their task more difficult in getting...
Well, it would have made it much more difficult, certainly.
Yes.
Of course, the whole atmosphere of Oxford was that you didn't press, it didn't pay. You'd have to wait. And it certainly paid off, far better than it did at Cambridge, where they did protest.
Yes, in other words, Annie Rogers sort of works behind the scenes.
Oh, she was a great worker behind the scenes, yes.
Yes, and so anything like Mrs. Packer's activities would just really rock the boat in a way.
It would have, yes.
Yes, yes. That's interesting. But as far as life in Somerville is concerned, then presumably there's not that distance from government and from the authorities and so on that Mrs. Pankhurst's organisation has. You're all, in a sense, being prepared to enter, official life and the established sections of society. You're not alien from them.
Oh, no.
You belong to them.
We belong to it, yes. Yeah. Yes.
So there's not that sort of anti-system sort of
No, I can't. I can't remember anybody being anti-establishment. In fact, yeah. Establishment hadn't been invented then.
No, of course, no.
And, no. No, I don't think so. We might be liberals or conservatives, but...
Yes. What about Eleanor Rathbone? She was presumably before your time, wasn't
Oh,
she?
Before my time, yes.
Because she had also been active in that debating
society. Oh, yes, very,
yes. You mentioned. And, of course, she's a non-militant yes. as well. And so the college has quite a few connections, I think, she and others... with the non-militant section.
I think it did, and I think it had been much more interested before my time rather than when I was up.
Yes, and Kathleen Courtney, of course, comes from the same sort of milieu, but again earlier.
She was much earlier than I was, you see.
It seems to me, I mean, just as a general broad...
Already engaged in jobs, like the jobs they could have, which wasn't much besides secretaries or teaching. Attached themselves to Mrs. Pankhurst. They knew how very difficult it was for women to get positions of any influence at all, or even any worthwhile salaries.
Yes.
And they felt much more bitter about it. The kind of people who went to Oxford, they might be poor. A lot of us were quite poor, but we were not actually earning our living at that time. And I don't think many of us had relations who were female relations.
Mm.
So we didn't feel the same.
And your families were reasonably well off, presumably.
Well, our families were very largely professional people, I should say.
Yes. So you wouldn't be thinking in terms of a career at all, probably, most of you, would
yeah.
you? You'd probably be thinking in terms of either being the daughter at home or getting married or possibly becoming an academic.
Well,
yourself.
You were thinking, yes, you were thinking of all you could do. You could teach, you could do social work. Of course, if you were good enough, you could become, go into academic circles. There wasn't much else. You could be a secretary.
Mm.
But the secretaries weren't very much.
And yet somehow this doesn't lead to resentment on
yes.
your part.
Quite a lot of people were returning home.
Yes.
And hadn't yes. got anything particular in mind.
Yes. How far did you feel, actually, or did your contemporaries feel, it's a bit difficult question to answer, that you were, in fact, working for women by doing well academically? I mean...
Not at all, I think.
I mean, you didn't really see yourself as pioneers for women at
all. Well, you see, I'd been brought up with the idea, always. My father was at one time a fellow of Trinity. And he found Oxford too restricted. Also, his mother wanted to live in London, and he wanted to live with her. So he retired from Trinity and became a professor of Bedford College.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where he met my mother. Well, then, after that, he felt he wanted to do something more political. And he went into, well, not really political, he went into Castles and assisted to edit Social England, and finally edited the... edition with pictures, but by that time he was writing for papers. He'd become a journalist.
I see, yeah.
He wasn't a regular journalist, but he used to write articles on special subjects and things like that.
Yes, I see.
So he was very much interested in politics.
What
and
about
he was,
the women's movement, actually?
Well, he was always pro-women. And I was brought up with the idea that I was going to Oxford and I was going to do something or other, whatever I wanted to, but I was going to, obviously, to earn my own living. And I never felt up against it at all, you see, because it was a very liberal household.
Presumably that would apply to a lot of yes. girls at Somerville or the Oxford College.
Yes, I think a lot of people have been brought up the same way.
I understand, yes.
Yes.
So there's much less reason for resentment generally.
And there wasn't any reason for me to revolt.
No.
Unless I did it. But sympathy from people who were much worse off than I was, but actually I didn't know any.
I understand, yes. What about, presumably it is a very, very separate world from the men's colleges in those days, isn't it? I
mean, well, yes, it was very separate. You didn't speak at lectures, at least it was supposed you shouldn't speak. And you could go out to tea, or have men to tea, if you had a chaperone. You had to have a chaperone, even if you had them to tea. Brothers were allowed, but you were not supposed to stay in the same room if a brother arrived, needless to say, we always did. A friend of mine had a twin brother, Jesus, and he used to walk in the afternoon when we were having coffee in her room and partake of it. We didn't go.
But you
and I had a brother up. Of course, he was younger than I am. Wanted some persuasion to come into a women's college. Baylor looked rather askance at women's colleges. I was told that women's students' hair was always untidy.
So you were much supervised, but presumably this wouldn't matter very much because on the whole girls wouldn't expect to mix easily with men at that age.
Well, they didn't, of course, because they were mostly brought up in houses where you didn't speak to men whom you hadn't been introduced to. I don't say that none of them ever did, but that was the general rule.
So in a way, you can't regard Somerville as very restrictive. It's just like parents.
Yes, I mean, exactly. It was like being at home in that.
Yes.
And they weren't more strict at all. In fact, Miss Penrose was really very unrestrictive. She said to me, the first time that I went to a lecture at which no other woman was attending, she said, did I want a chaperone? And I said, no. This was in my third year. And she said, yes, I think a chaperone does make you more conspicuous. Which
so
is true.
She allowed you to go without one.
Yes, yes.
Yes. But did you actually go to men tutors at all very much?
Oh, yes. Well, to start with, we were not supposed to go to men's rooms in college. If they had to come to us, but I think in the end they make such a fuss about coming to us and the time it took, that we were allowed to go to them. But I don't remember going myself to any college.
But it was quite common.
We went to the married ones. I used to go to old Dr. Walker, but then he lived in Merton Street.
But it wasn't unusual for a Somerville girl to go to a male tutor in Oxford.
Oh, not in the least. No, we all went to male tutors, I should say.
Mm, did you really?
Yeah. Well, if you did greats, you had to.
Yes.
And
did you yourself do greats?
Yes.
I see. So you only came to history afterwards, really?
Yes, I came to history because I thought I'd like to do social work, and so I did a course at LSE. And I found I liked economic history, and I said, this is my subject.
Was that Knowles?
No, it was Erwick. Actually, Erwick. I started doing a DPhil with
Lillian Knowles, isn't it?
Under Lillian Knowles.
Yes.
But then I went to St Hilda's long before I finished it, but it ended up in the book on cotton.
Yes, I see, yes. So really you started off not really intending to be a historian at all?
No, I didn't intend to. I liked history. I was much better at history than I was at philosophy. And old Dr. Walker taught me an awful lot. I was very amused the other day to read something about the book on the cotton trade, which said it was very, really, very remarkable that the two authors produced such a good book and they neither of them had any formal historical training. I thought you didn't know old Dr. Walker.
But presumably you also had tutors mainly in college, did you, or you personally?
Well, you had a tutor in college, but actually when I was doing greats, I didn't go to anybody in college.
Didn't you?
In Mods, well, of course, there was Miss Lorimer, but she was away for my first year, and we had old Mr. Marchant from, Lincoln, I think.
Mm.
He used to come, you see, we looked on him as our tutor, then Miss Lorimer came back, and she taught us some things, but we always had men for proses.
Did you really? Mm. Yes. So really your contacts with Oxford University are limited to going to a male tutor on your own,
yes.
or possibly with another girl, I suppose,
yes.
would you? Sometimes?
Well, generally with another girl, yes.
Yes. Or going to lectures where you'd be chaperoned, and that's really all, is it? And the occasional...
Well, if you had a brother up, you did get to know some people. Slightly.
Mm. But there's not much social
life. Not much, no, not much.
So that presumably means that you have a lot of social life in college, do you?
You had a lot of social life in college. Really, all your social life centred in college.
Did it really?
Yes. Some of it was just beginning. I think it was more ahead than ahead of the other colleges. We had a tennis match to which we were allowed to ask men. And we had the first intercollegiate debate between a man's and a woman's college, between Somerville and Balliol, with Walter Monckton in the chair.
Yes, yes, because Harold Millen was also up at the time.
Yes.
You were there. Yes, yes.
Men were much better speakers than women, I'm sorry to say. But then we didn't shine. When in my day, we didn't very much shine at public speaking.
Mind you, it's unusual. I suppose it was still rather unusual for women to speak in public, wasn't it, in those days? I mean, because it had been almost forbidden.
Yes, yes. Yeah. But now that I see that a woman is trying to be president of the union, I think, well, how far we were from that.
Yes. But your social life then in the college consists in the usual things one would expect. That is, presumably, some sort of entertainments with your tutors.
Yes.
Quite a lot. They'd invite you to meals, I suppose, and things, would they? Or to tea or something, would they, the tutors?
Well, we could invite men to meals if we had to tea if we had a chaperone.
Mm.
And we could go to them if we had a chaperone.
Mm. And then you'd entertain each other, of course, a lot. The
yes.
girls among themselves. And you'd have a social life of that sort, presumably, wouldn't you? That is, talking to your contemporaries, you know, as one.
Oh, yes, plenty of that.
Yes.
Yes.
And then, what about societies? Because presumably there weren't university-wide societies.
No, there weren't university societies, but including women. But there were plenty of college societies and various things.
Were there?
Yes.
Like the debating society. What other sort of societies?
Well, the debating society. I don't remember going to any other society, but I think there was a historical society, and I'm not sure there wasn't an English society.
Because you see, again, girls socially inside. I mean,
no.
All colleges restricted their girls, their members.
Well, of course, people who came up from the same schools and went to different colleges knew each other to start with, and the men, I think, had more contacts in that way. They introduced their friends to each other and so on.
Yes.
But actually, I know very few people in Somerville, although they may have had friends in other colleges, they didn't see much of them.
What about the women's colleges? Did they mix among themselves very much, apart from this?
Well, no, not very much.
Mm.
My friend here had a sister at St. Hilda's then.
Mm.
But I remember going down once with her to St. Hilda's, but otherwise we didn't see anything of each other. And I did know somebody at LMH, and she asked me to teach. She'd been up longer than I had, and I think I asked her back, and then dropped.
Mm. What about your tutors? Did you see much in college, that is? Did you see much of them? I mean, were you on a social relationship?
Well, my tutor being Miss Lorimer, who was not a very social person, I didn't see very much of her. Some people saw much more. Miss Pope, for instance, I think.
Well, she was the modern language tutor, wasn't she?
Modern language,
yes.
French.
Yes, rather well known.
Oh, well, she went to Manchester afterwards. She should have become professor at Oxford, but she became professor at Manchester instead. She was a charming person.
Yes.
Very ugly, very amusing, very, very kindly.
And Miss Penrose, presumably, also.
Miss Penrose was a very shy person, and it was difficult to get to know her. A few people did, I think. But I didn't. Of course, when we saw our tutors was when we went into dinner. You all met in the common room, or you should, and the dons would then select somebody to take in to dinner. Of course, there were only about, I suppose, 10 at most, and so the only 10 students were selected, but that was the way you got to know them. And you sat at her table and talked to them, and being taken in by Miss Penrose was, I assure you, not sought after, because she was so difficult to talk to. She was very shy, and most of us were rather shy, at least I was. And she used to ask you very awkward questions. For instance, with many of the first year sitting round, one was sitting just opposite, this was in my third year, she asked me, "And what do you think of the first year, Miss Mann?" Too much.
Very difficult, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So, in fact, did everybody get selected for High Table gradually?
Oh, yes, in time. There wasn't a list, but I'm quite sure everybody got there, because they always selected a different one, and in the course of a year or so, they'd get you through everybody.
Because how large was any one year, then, at Somerville?
About 30.
I see, so there were really 19...
There were about 100 people in college altogether.
Quite a small affair, really.
Oh, yes.
So you could get to know everybody.
Yes, and also,
well,
in my day, before the hall was built, it was divided into two, hall and south, and they had two separate dining rooms. So that, you see, we in hall were only about 50.
I see. So it really was almost like...
And you knew the people in hall much better than you knew them in south, because your rooms were much nearer to each other.
Yes,
used to drop in.
What were living conditions like in Somerville in those days? I mean, did you have comfortable rooms?
Oh, yes, they were very comfortable.
Were they?
Yes.
With service? I mean, with...
Oh, far more service than they get now.
Is that so?
Oh, yes, everything was done for you, including hot water being brought round before dinner.
Was it really?
Oh, yes.
I see. So you didn't have to do for yourself at all?
No, not at all.
Any more than you would at home?
No.
It was again... I mean, it's rather like... It's like having a lot of homes... joined together.
Yes.
I mean, really, something.
Yes.
Presumably.
Oh, didn't do anything at all.
Yes.
Didn't even wash up on Sunday night, which some people had to afterwards.
Yes. So really, it's rather a comfortable, close community, which doesn't differ all that much from your family life, except there are more people there and so on. Well, what about sort of... escapades and things. I mean, is there much of that sort of thing? I mean, escapades, I mean, sort of wild things.
No, oh no, not much. In fact, I can remember being taken to Oud's by a party of second years. They had a ticket to spare. And I said, I would like to go with them. Well, we stayed to the end. You see, we were supposed to be in at 11:30. We didn't get in at 11:30. We got in about a quarter of an hour later, I suppose. And that was a very wild escapade. We were all sent for next morning. And I went in last, and she said to me, why? And I said, well, I couldn't very well go.
Miss Penrose, is it?
Yes. I couldn't very well go. And Miss Penrose looked at me, and she said, yes, I see it was difficult, but still I think you might have made a move. I don't know what she said to the others.
What about discipline generally? I mean, presumably you didn't feel... disciplined?
Not at all. I don't think there was any resentment.
No, because you were disciplined at home anyway, presumably.
Well, yes. You didn't have... Well, I didn't go out in the evening at home. Well, not much. I mean, occasionally one went to a theatre, but apart from that, one didn't go out much at home.
Mm. That's most interesting. That really does give a very clear picture of what it was like, and presumably it was also rather similar in LMH and to the other women's...
Well, I should think so, yes, very like.
Yes. So really you're not in any sense part of... You don't see yourself as part of the women's movement
going up to Somerville at all.
I mean, it's not like that at all, really. I mean, you're just really improving your opportunities and your education for yourself.
Exactly.
Really.
You're going on a more course, which seems to have been predestined for you, and I didn't rebel. Some people might have rebelled, and of course a lot did, but I didn't, and I don't think any of my contemporaries had. We weren't a rebellious lot at all.
So you went on to the LSE then, did you, during the First World War, was there?
First year of the First World War, yes.
I see,
yes. And then I decided, well, at the end of the year, I decided I wanted to do war work, and I didn't like any of the jobs in social work that were offered me, and I went into the Admiralty as a clerk. Well, that was rather amusing, but in the end, like all government offices at that time, they liked to keep you without giving you anything to do. Half the Admiralty work in the section that I was moved to the Ministry of Shipping. And therefore, what I had been doing went. And they didn't give me anything else. And I was not going to spend my days doing nothing. So in the last year of the war, they were recruiting people to go to the peace conference. And I said that I would like to go. It took... I had to leave the Admiralty. There wasn't any regulation saying you must And so I did, after an awful struggle, and I had to go a month doing nothing, and then the Foreign Office took me on, but the Admiralty wouldn't release me, although they hadn't any work for me. Gave me good insight into civil service.
Very interesting.
And I gather that went on the Second World War too.
You're presumably doing work that men would have done in peacetime.
Yes, I took the place of a man, second division clerk.
And with a lot of other women there, presumably all around.
Oh yes, a lot of other women there, yes.
And presumably that gives you quite a lot of opportunities to train yourselves up as civil servants if you want to be, does it? I mean,
it wasn't work I should have liked to have gone on doing. It was very amusing when one was there, because they had a lot of people from all ranks of the who weren't civil servants. There was a wonderful couple called Kahn and Skelt who used to check me. Before I went to St. Hilda's, they asked me to come and teach a little political theory to the historians. So I used to go up once a week and have about 8 people who wanted some. But Vera Brittain and Winifred Hopby didn't want to come, so I didn't have them. Until the last time they said, some of them had found it helpful and they'd like to come, so they did come, just for once, you see. And I don't really remember very much about it.
So you were in the civil service until 1918, really?
Yes, I went to the peace conference as a clerk.
Yes.
It was much the same thing, there wasn't enough to do. But then I came home. I came home in July, after the peace with Germany was signed. I didn't stay on for the peace with Austria, though some of my friends did. And I came home, and I made inquiries about economics, but LSE wouldn't let me off anything because of having a degree at Oxford, and I couldn't really take another 3 years. So I decided to do this.
That's
but of course it didn't give you, it only gave you very economic. Very little economic, that's elementary economic theory. But to show you what Oxford thought about economic theory, at that time, my brother, who was at Balliol and he did mods, and then he went off to the war, and then he went back to Balliol. He was going to do shortened grades. But somebody suggested to him that he should go to Bombay to be professor of economics. They said you could easily read it up on the voyage out.
Well, you probably could in those days.
You could Oxford, but not economics as taught in Cambridge or LSE,
I see. It's a much less professional affair in Oxford.
Oh, yes. Oxford didn't think much of economics.
So you did what?
Edgeworth, who was professor, was a purely mathematical economist.
Yes.
And, I have been to his lectures, but I didn't follow much of them.
Yes. So you did a one-year diploma then.
Yes.
And then what happened after?
I was taught by a Mr. Todd, who had come to Balliol. He was recommended by somebody. He had an Edinburgh degree and he'd been professor of economics in Cairo. And he came up once a week for 2 days, I think, to Balliol and taught economics there. And, of course, PPE was just beginning. Well, PPE, yes, it had just been started.
Yeah.
And he suggested to me that if I hadn't got a job, I should go and be his secretary, because he started a service of information about cotton. And he had various American clients. So I went and was his secretary for about a year. And I applied for various jobs then. And I soon saw that without further qualifications, I should never get a job. So I applied to the LSE to do a DPhil, and I started on cotton, having got interested in cotton by that time. And they said yes, I could do it in 7 years. If I took one day a week off Mr. Todd, it would take 7 years to get the DPhil. So I said that was impossible, so I retired from him and devoted all my time, as I lived in the suburbs, so quite easy to live at home, you see, and do this. And before I'd finished, well, I did about a year's research, about 18 months, I think. And then I was told about the job at St. Hilda's.
That was tutoring economics?
Well, that was to teach economics for PPE. And so I applied for that and was appointed there. And that's how I got there.
I see, yes. And when were you appointed, Miss Mann, then?
1923.
And you stayed there thereafter?
I stayed there on. You see, the principal died very untimely. And I succeeded her, 28.
When did you first come across Mrs. Fisher, then?
Well, I suppose then, when I became principal, I think, and they invited me to dinner.
I see, sort of principal to principal sort of thing. Because, as I probably explained to you, I wrote to you earlier about Miss Butler and her connections with Mrs. Fisher. And Mrs. Fisher does seem to have been quite an influence on her, and presumably you would have quite a lot of contact.
I didn't have much. I didn't have very much contact, you know, except the way one meets people in Oxford. You meet them at social occasions. But
so she wasn't an influence on you.
No, not at all.
That's interesting. Then how does Mrs. Toomer come on your scene?
Well, Mrs. Toomer, I had a friend at Oxford who became a lecturer for the WEA, or Oxford Extramural, and she was at Lincoln.
That's Miss Cameron.
Miss Cameron. Yes. And, of course, she knew Mrs. Toomer very well, because Mrs. Toomer was very active in the WEA. And I used to go up and see her. Miss Cameron started in the 30s an organisation for employing the unemployed, which was a very remarkable thing, really, because she made them see that it was a useful thing to make things for organisations which wouldn't have them otherwise. And they used to make things like tables and chairs and cupboards and so on for children's homes and little beds for the children in the day nursery to lie on and so on. And then they used to have a ceremony and take these things and present them. The men who'd made them went. And Mrs. Toomer, of course, was a part of this. Mrs. Cameron was there quite a long time. And I got to know Mrs. Toomer that way.
Because she came to Oxford a bit, did she, to courses and things like that?
No, I don't think... Miss Cameron came, but Mrs. Toomer didn't.
I see.
Not that I can remember, no. But I always met her when I went to Lincoln.
I see, yes. Well, that's, of course, where Miss Major knew her.
And then they started a holiday home in a village not very far from Lincoln, about 6 miles out, and Mrs. Toomer was very active in that home because she knew a great deal more about housekeeping than Miss Cameron did, who wasn't at all good at it.
I don't know whether you know Miss Murray in Lincoln, Flora Murray, who was active in local affairs there, but she described Miss Toomer as a dumpling.
Yes, she was, in that way.
A sort of rather round,
very round,
practical.
Very kindly, very sensible, full of common sense. Not, I should say, particularly intellectual. I mean, she wouldn't be frustrated by not having gone to college or anything like that, but she was full of good sense and very active. You often get with working women who have a good deal of experience of life.
A good-hearted woman.
Very good-hearted, yes. Almost kindly.
Yes. This is interesting. So, you know, I've hit you from a number of directions. Because I did actually go and see.
But you didn't sort of agitate directly.
We weren't agitating about it, no.
Yes. Only one does tend to sort of conflate the two, perhaps too easily, more easily than one should. One sees sort of women's education as simply one branch of a general movement for women's opportunities, whereas in fact they operate in quite separate compartments, really.
They stem, I think, rather from different causes. There were a lot of women who felt frustrated because they couldn't have an education at the university, I think. And then, on the other hand, there were women who were frustrated because they couldn't get a decent job.
Yes, absolutely. One thing which does puzzle me rather is what sort of parents sent their children to women's colleges in Oxford before 1914? I mean, why should one send one's daughter to an Oxford college? They're mainly middle class, as you say, professional parents.
Really. All middle class. I don't remember any whom you could call working class, or even lower middle class.
No.
The lower middle class came after the war. And very, very few working class even then. I only remember two or three whom you could really call working class. But I think mainly professional people. Let me think.
Not aristocracy, not really high up people, but on the other hand, not...
Well, clergymen's daughters, ministers' daughters,
daughters
of widows.
Yes.
People who had to earn their living and would like to earn it teaching rather than any other way, and who were good enough. Yes. Of course, the schools by that time were sending people to universities and had a good many mistresses who'd come from universities and who encouraged you to go to them.
Yes, so there's a much closer, as close a relationship between the women's schools and the women's colleges as there is between the men's schools and the men's colleges.
I should say so.
Yes.
Yes.
And in a sense, you're training people to go back to the schools, and it's all a sort of circular relationship.
Yes, I think so. Mm. Colleges used to have schools used to have relations with various colleges. I mean, my school always sent people to Cambridge, and I was the first who went to Oxford because my father had been there.
I see.
And, I know other schools who always sent the girls to Oxford, unless there was some reason why they shouldn't.
Yes. What about work, Miss Mann? Were you pressed hard at Somerville to work very hard? Did you feel that there was a sort of feeling that you really must work rather hard there?
No, I don't think so. I didn't work nearly hard enough, of course.
I'm really wondering whether you were sort of on display as women, showing what you could do to the men, so to speak, whether there was any...
No, I don't think so. I don't think we had a feeling of that kind.
No.
Well, I had a feeling that my father expected me to get first, and I didn't. And, of course, I thought he would be rather disappointed, but...
It was your father you were concerned about.
My
not,
father, I was
not
concerned about not. Yeah,
or whoever.
Exactly.
Yes, I see. Yes, that's very interesting. Well, that really does put me right. Is there anything else you think one ought to emphasise when one's trying to understand?
Well, I can't think of anything much.
Was like,
No, I can't.
I mean, you had a dean, presumably, did you, who was responsible for discipline, or was Miss Penrose?
Sorry?
Did you have a dean who was responsible for discipline, or? Was it Miss Penrose, really?
It was Miss Penrose in our day, yes.
Yes, I see.
The dean came later, I think.
Yes. So, really, one doesn't get the impression of women sort of shut in and disciplined at all. It's rather, in a sense, an opportunity.
Well, I don't honestly think there were. There was a tale that used to go round, it's quite true, of a young woman from St. Hilda's who was apparently very studious and always used to go to the camera after dinner. But then it was discovered that she met a young man there who always escorted her home. And this caused a terrific scandal. And I think she was sent down. That's the only case I ever heard of. No, it was much more usual for those who did marry to marry their tutors.
Was it?
Yes, oh yes, I named several.
Did you really?
Yes.
Good heavens. Was it a sort of family atmosphere, then, would you say, in Somerville? I mean, was it like a family, in a way, with Miss Penrose a sort of mother?
No, no, I don't think of Miss Penrose as a mother. We looked at her as a very distant person.
Yes.
We respected her very much, but we called her the Pen. And we always had a going-down play, and going-down play of my year, but I wasn't in it because I was staying a fourth year. Took off a lot of the dons, and a friend of mine took off Miss Penrose in my clothes. She was all suitable. I don't think it was very well received, but nothing was said.
What about religion? Were you expected to go to chapel then?
Not at Somerville.
I see.
See, Somerville was founded not without a religion, but it refused to be Church of England. LMH was Church of England.
So it's really interdenominational.
Yes, really denominational. Mm. Although it had a clause that the principal must be Church of England, but I think they've abolished that now. Somerville didn't have anything like that. And we certainly weren't... there wasn't any chapel except on Sunday evening when there was a service in hall, a very short one, and nearly everybody went to that, but you weren't made to.
So that was a sort of assembly, insofar as it was one of the whole college, but it wasn't you weren't pressed.
So that you got people of all religions and none at Somerville. A much more varied collection, I should think, than you got at LMH. Mm. Although, by the time I went up, LMH wasn't confined to Church of England at all. I don't think it ever was.
So it's rather like Newnham versus Girton, is it, really? Somerville versus LMH. I mean, Girton's an Anglican affair, as LMH was, isn't it, primarily? Newnham and Somerville are interdependent.
Well, Girton started outside, and Newnham started inside. I think that's the difference.
Yes. Yes.
Really?
Yes.
They were both, I think, about the same time, but
yes.
Newnham braved the atmosphere of Cambridge and Girton didn't.
Yes, yes. Did the parents have much to do with the girls in Somerville? I mean, did you see a lot of parents and that sort of thing?
No, their parents used to come up, but one didn't see much of them.
Mm.
I mean, they might invite, your friends might invite you to meet their parents, but I can't remember that. I know when my mother came up, we had a punt party with her chaperone. My brother was up by then, you see, so he had some of his friends from Bayeux, and Macmillan was among them.
What's
so I was very much amused the other day when Macmillan wrote that article about Oxford to say that they weren't conscious of the women, because I wrote to him and said, I've no doubt you have forgotten this, but you came to the first intercollegiate tennis party, no doubt unwillingly.
Did he reply to you?
Oh yes, he replied. He didn't mention that. I really wrote because he said he was visitor of all the women's colleges, and he just isn't.
Yes, I see. Yes. Yes.
So,
one last thing I wanted to ask you was really, whether you really went into the town much at all. I mean, was it a little private world in Somerville which you...
Well, you didn't know people who were not connected with the university.
No.
I suppose you might have if you'd known them via your family, but otherwise I didn't know.
And there's no
anybody,
reason to go in the town except when you were going to lectures or to...
either you went to lectures or to shop.
Mm. Mm. You wouldn't really need to go to the town very much, presume. It's a sort of self-contained world in Somerville.
Well, it was a very self-contained world, yes.
Yes.
You didn't go very much into the town for concerts or anything like that. So you went to the theatre, and you generally went in the gallery. You weren't allowed to go to the pit. It was thought that the men went to the pit, so you had to go in the gallery.
But of course, all this is not the college's own rules particularly, it's what they think the parents would expect,
isn't
it? I mean,
yes,
it is. I mean, it's not their own idea.
No, it isn't. Well, it was the usual social set-up of the time, that you didn't make friends with men to whom you didn't know something about.
Mm.
And many parents, I think, would have objected if you had.
Yes, yes.
But...
Yes, that sets it all into context. Well, thank you.